Hello, welcome back to One Year to Wellness. Finn and Lydia here.
And today we have our beginner's guide to ashwagandha and the adaptogens. So in this episode, we are going to be talking about that beginner's guide to ashwagandha and the adaptogens. We're going to talk about the best adaptogens for the nervous system. We're going to talk about best adaptogenic herbs for stress. We're going to talk about the effects of ashwagandha on females. And then we're going to talk about the downsides of ashwagandha as well. So starting with our beginner's guide to ashwagandha and adaptogens, what are the most important things that people need to know when they're coming into this world of adaptogens?
So the thing you really need to learn about adaptogens is that they are different in their nature. To give you a good framework for adaptogens, what they are doing is helping your body to adapt to changes in your environment that lead to triggers in our limbic system, stress triggers, stress responses, stress hormone production, and then the concomitant downsides in terms of biological effect, in terms of disruption of blood sugar, all those bits and bobs. But basically the adaptogens, what happens, you come into an environment where you have a change in noise, light, like density of people, anything that's out of your comfort zone, essentially, this triggers our stress response. And our stress response in the short term is a useful thing. Our stress response, our fight and flight stress response, helps us to get away from dangers, immediate dangers. You know, somebody beeping a horn as we're about to cross the road, that's a really useful thing. You go, oh, what? And you step back. The longer term and chronic results of that stress, unfortunately, because we're all living in these urban environments where there is just chronic stress, whether it's electromagnetic frequencies, whether it's just people and noise and density and all those sorts of things, and blue light and screens, all this sort of stuff. All these things are making so this very finely tuned stress response, which is designed to peak and trough in these short phases, is now spiking kind of constantly throughout the day. So our body never gets a chance to come out of that fight or flight state. And chronic stress is one of the most deleterious things. And we know it's behind all of the inflammatory disorders that lead to most of the major, you know, degenerative diseases and deaths in the Western world.
And so adaptogens help us to, that if we are really, really stressed, they help bring us out of that stress. But also if we're really low and really lethargic as our response to perhaps stress, they help to energize us?
Exactly. And that's the critical thing to define an adaptogen. It's a regulator. It's not just a stimulant and it's not just an anxiolytic or nervine. It actually helps to bring us up if we're down and down if we're up, and help to balance or regulate our nervous system response to stress so that we get a healthy stress response. The thing is, when we look at adaptogens, we also look at, because there's a big group of them, it's a big group of herbs, including ashwagandha, rhodiola, holy basil, lemon balm, some people would say cordyceps, most people would say
reishi,
Siberian ginseng, panax ginseng. Those are the biggies. And there's lots of, like, you know, maybe they're adaptogens, maybe they're not, chaga, etc. And the thing is to recognize that each of those herbs or medicinal mushrooms have different, confer different properties. So some of them are more tonic, some of them are more calming. Each of them is probably beneficial for most people. So you can't go very far wrong with adaptogens. They're not like medicinal or medical drugs. You know, they really are supportive in general to the biology. But depending on your stress response, and I find this is a really good way for people to kind of break it down, we usually have our stress responses defined as either we go towards anger, or we go towards high state panicky anxiety, like up in our head, or we go towards depression. Now, all of us have some of all of those three responses, but in general terms, we'll default to one. Mine is anger. Yours is?
Anxiety.
There you go. So, and we know that those different herbs will suit different types of stress responses, because let's say for me, that anger stress response is something of like a male stress response, like a very testosterone-ish sort of anger sort of stress response. And so for me, what I don't need is a herb like ashwagandha, actually, that pushes more of that testosterone male masculine quality. I need quietening feminine herbs like reishi, like holy basil, like Siberian ginseng. Whereas those people who might be on the floor, like with like low energy, like they get a 1,000,000,000 texts or emails, and they just want to pull the duvet over their head and run away from it all, those people need that ashwagandha. They need that panax ginseng, either Korean or American ginseng. Those are like deep libidinous tonics, deep like sex hormone and stress hormone tonics. They increase your resilience, your coping capacity for dealing with stress. And there's also an end point where you go like, okay, I've done that now, and now I move on to the next thing. So the idea is these aren't like chronic herbs that you take chronically, you take them phasically as your body, you know, as you listen to your body, your body's changing response to the environment and changing response to stress.
So what you're saying is that they're really individual.
Very individual.
And you need to understand your personality, how your response to stress is, and then how to use them in the different phases that you're in.
Exactly. I hope that makes sense. Yeah.
And so ashwagandha specifically, just to go very, we're going to go into deeper detail later, but just the basics. If someone's coming to this and they're like, well, what are the qualities of ashwagandha? What would be the kind of top three qualities, top three uses maybe?
So ashwagandha is known for, in its traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, Indian herbal medicine, where it's been used for centuries, it would be used as a male libidinous tonic. So it translates something roughly as like strength of 10,000 horses or something like that, or strength of 10 horses, something. So it's like, it's giving male potency to a person. So potency being that like drive. That drive could be sex drive, but it's also just drive to go out there and do in the world, to achieve, to study for longer, to run for longer, to think and read for longer. It's essentially just like giving you more capacity. It's not necessarily, unless it's depending on the person, it's not necessarily a calming herb. But people who are like tired and wired, like really like on the floor but like wired, often they can find ashwagandha calming because it's an adaptogen, right? So it adapts the body's stress response. For those who are already like up at that, like, you know anger stress response, find themselves having like outbursts, those are the people who don't need ashwagandha. But yeah, so that's a big thing with ashwagandha. It's known to be helpful for sleep. Ashwagandha is a great sleep herb for those who belong in that ashwagandha stress response kind of group. It's also great for helping to recover from workouts and helping to build strength and build muscle. It's also been shown to be helpful for low mood as well. There's some really powerful studies that demonstrate some really, really beneficial things around ashwagandha low mood and the sort of clinical terms around that we can't use here.
Okay. So if you are coming to adaptogens because you are looking at regulating your nervous system, if you know that you're someone who is suffering from chronic stress and nervous system stuff is either overregulated or underregulated in some kind of a way, what are the best ones that you would go to? What would you reach for first?
I think probably if I'm picking like my top three, it's probably like rhodiola. Rhodiola is a little bit like ashwagandha. It's a little bit of a male tonic, but a little bit gentler. So it has this potential to increase athletic performance. It helps oxygenation of tissue. Anything that improves oxygenation of tissue is going to reduce biological stress. Reducing hypoxia, improving, you know, cell turnover, improving the quality of blood flow to cells, and improving the oxygen essentially to drive ATP production. So rhodiola is a biggie. I think Siberian ginseng is probably my next one, because our nervous system is, you know, largely, like I said, in a wired state. And Siberian ginseng is a lovely quietening herb. Siberian ginseng is, it's also known as like a false ginseng. Eleutherococcus, it's its other kind of like Latin name. And false ginseng, i.e. doesn't contain what's called ginsenosides, which are the kind of pushy ones that you get in Pallas ginseng. It contains eleutherosides, which are generally kind of more regulating. It's a more feminine quality herb, if I'm honest. And I think, Siberian ginseng is probably my next one. The third one, I think probably holy basil. Holy basil is a lovely, peaceful herb. So our nervous system, which is, you know, constantly responding to, you know, excess stimulus, whether it be from hard conversations or just having to get on the bus with a million people in the morning and feeling, or where you're like, your mind goes into overdrive with small situations that they kind of go out of control and you spin out on these thoughts, these kind of uncontrolled thought patterns that are negative. Holy basil is fantastic to help to rein that in. It's a really peaceful, zenning herb. What's known as Rasayana in Ayurvedic herbal medicine. Rasayana is being herbs that treat every body system actually, but it's a really lovely, like I say, peaceful, quieting herb.
Yeah, I found that one particularly useful because I would be someone who tends towards overthinking. You know, when I'm dysregulated, I go into that overthinking and I fill in all those gaps with too many things in my imagination and I kind of get really stuck up in my head, and then it's hard for me to sleep and hard for me to switch off and get into that calm place. And taking Tulsi or Honey Basil, it's been really amazing, really calming, and you can really feel the effects. You take it and within, I don't know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, I always find I'm kind of like, I can just take that breath again. And it's nice, it's they're gentle as well. That it's a really gentle one. There isn't like side effects to that, which is a lovely thing about adaptogens as well. It's kind of nice to know that.
Yeah, big time.
So effects of ashwagandha, adaptogenic herbs for stress, that's what we're doing first. best adaptogenic herbs for stress specifically?
Yeah, so if I'm saying stress, so it's stress where the stress isn't going to go away, yeah. And stress is deleterious over time. So it's not you stress where it's that short term, like I jump in a cold water bath or whatever, and I have that short term acute stress that is actually beneficial long term for our body. When it's chronic stress, it's debilitating. And I think probably if I'm picking three herbs maybe in this situation, I would say ashwagandha, because it has this ability, like I said, to improve our body's resilience and coping capacity for dealing with stress. I would say cordyceps, because cordyceps also has quite a masculine tonic quality to it. And something that helps, like a herb or mushroom in this case, that helps to support like libido and that kind of lust for life, our mojo, can really be helpful for us to help us reduce our sensation of that stress, essentially. And then the third one I put in there probably is reishi, actually. Because reishi is this beautiful balancing quality, you can use these herbs together as well. If you ever go to a master herbalist or medical herbalist, they won't prescribe single herbs. They'll always use them in conjunction. The masculine and feminine qualities of herbs, they'll often combine. So put your reishi with your cordyceps. And what's beautiful about this is that like you can use cordyceps and ashwagandha as your daytime herbs and reishi as your evening herb. And that has a lovely regulating effect on your cycle, on your diurnal cycle, so that you have the kind of masculine go-gettery qualities that you need to bring out. Often if you're in your working day, you're like, oh, well, I just have to get up and I just have to go to work and I just have to deal with all of the whatever phone calls and other stress I have to deal with. And then at nighttime, you can enhance that peacefulness that your body needs to have to get back into sleep state. And the joy of adaptogens is that by funding your energy levels during the day, it naturally supports your body's descent into rest, which is what you really want. It's getting back that cycle, that nocturnal thing.
So they adapt to us, but they help us to be better at adapting to our life as well. So it's about that flexibility and learning to go with the waves, because we're always going to encounter stresses in our life. It's not like we have days where it's just like, oh, beauty is happening all the time. But it's allowing us to go, okay, well, here's the stress. Here's how I respond in an appropriate way. And then here's how I calm down in an appropriate way. And the more we take them, the more we get better at adapting to those things. It's not just while we're on them. It's like actually a learning process.
That's the joy of it. Exactly. So they're support herbs. They're bridge herbs. They're herbs that should be taken in a phasic loading dose. Like, so you take a little bit of them for a week and a half. Let's say a good way to do a cycling dose or loading dose program with adaptogens, which I think is really helpful. I often guide people towards, and it seems to be pretty successful. And I use it myself. Is if you say you have a 4-week cycle that you engage in twice and then you drop the adaption. That 4-week cycle looks like week one, you take half of what's stated as the dose on the side of the bottle. Week two, you take the stated dose on the side of the bottle. Week three, you take double that dose. And week four, you take a full rest. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, nice.
And that your body getting like a little tiny taste of what it needs, followed by a real flood of it, gives it, for whatever reason, gives it the sort of flooding effect that allows it to go, okay, now I really know what I'm doing with this. And then you take the support away, and then your body is challenged to go like, okay, well, what do I feel like when I'm off this? How do I cope with this thing? And that's how workouts work. It's how cold plunges work. Nothing is designed to be chronic. It's designed to be phasic. So you take a lot of it, and then your body goes, oh, now I'm challenged. Oh, what was that thing I did last week when I had this herb? Oh, I remember now. I'm going to do it for myself next time. So that's why that kind of two cycles of that 4-week loading dose program I find really useful.
I think that's what one of the lovely things, isn't it, about herbal medicine is that you don't end up in a situation where you're just taking pills the rest of your life and you're reliant on something else. You're not outsourcing to those pills. You're actually using them as a medicine, as a wisdom, as a learning, and then your body gets better and then it doesn't need those pills.
Anymore, exactly.
Which is really nice and really comforting.
Yes, what she said.
So, ashwagandha and females. That's something that we hear talked about a lot, but not really explained very well. And you were talking about it earlier as like a male energy herb. And that can be really confusing because then women might go, well, I'm not male energy. Does that work for me? And let's talk about that a little bit.
So I suppose when we talk about female hormonal cycles, this is particularly for women who are menstruating, right? You have your follicular and your luteal phase. The follicular phase builds towards your first major peak in estrogen in the middle of your cycle. And generally in those times, you have a bit more capacity as you work towards the middle of your cycle. And what I would tend to say in those times, maybe it's better to work with more feminine or feminizing or feminine herbs like reishi, like Siberian ginseng, like holy basil, like passion flower. But as the body goes towards the end of the luteal phase, when it gets to shedding, there can often be a much more emotional vulnerability there, much more of essentially it's tougher to be in the world where your day doesn't change, but your cycle has changed. And so who you are hormonally has really fundamentally changed. And so in those times, maybe that's what I'd reach for, the ashwagandha, the cordyceps, the ones that give that capacity, that give that strength and resilience in times where you aren't able to take time for yourself, but can allow you to get through those stresses to reduce specifically that biological damaging effect of stress that can disrupt female hormonal cycles as much as anything else, right? It's that sun and moon kind of thing, right?
So it's helping to support you to live within your cycles in a way that doesn't leave you to end up with depletion.
Exactly.
Is that right?
That's literally exactly it. Yeah.
Okay. And that's really interesting, I think, because it's so, you know, when you don't understand these things, when you don't know into them a lot, you kind of, you hear these sound bites that you see on the internet and you're like, oh, well, that's not for me. And like, I would have been someone who I was like, oh, ashwagandha, I think it's going to be too much for me, too overstimulating for my system. I'm really sensitive. I react to things really strongly. But actually to think of it that way, where I'm living in within my cycle in those phases, like that kind of, we call it the PMS phase, but it would be that phase where we're kind of coming into listening to our body more. We're more emotional. The stuff that we've been holding or repressing during the month is coming up, is being offered for us to deal with. But sometimes we don't have the space, like you said, or the capacity to deal it because we've got kids or work or different things. But you do feel really vulnerable. You feel really raw. And it's like the veil is thinner and it's hard to be out in the world. To have something at that stage to draw on like ashwagandha, I can see how that would actually be really nurturing and really supportive for me. It would be like being given like a helping hand in that moment. So that's really nice to sort of understand that a little bit better.
Cool.
Now, the downsides of ashwagandha. So one thing that's happened for me a lot is that people come to me, clients come to me, and they're like, my friends are taking ashwagandha. Everyone's on ashwagandha. They're all saying it's really amazing. I want to take ashwagandha. I'm recommending it to all my friends. And I'm always a little bit like, ooh, I'm not sure. Can you talk into that a little bit?
Yeah, so most people come to me about ashwagandha because their friend said it was great and helped them sleep. Usually that's it. And it can really help people to sleep, but also it can also lead to reduced quality of sleep if you're the person who, like me, is somebody who has bags of energy and goes at their day really hard, and actually they just need to be quietened down. They don't need ashwagandha in the morning. Now, there are times like when I've just been sick, I will definitely take ashwagandha. In fact, I was taking ashwagandha up until a couple of weeks ago, pointing at my large medicine cabinet over there. But yeah, so ashwagandha is a great tonic, a physical ergogenic tonic, like Shizandra actually is another good example of that. And so it really lifts the body, lifts the libido, lifts the capacity and the courage, that sort of stuff. But the downside of that is that it is like very driving for the nervous system. It's, you know, it's
like
not
as enervating.
Yeah, enervating. It's not a stimulant as caffeine is. Like, it's not the same thing as that. But certainly, like, chronic use of ashwagandha, I wouldn't really recommend for females or males, but particularly for women. I'd be quite cautious around recommending ashwagandha in that situation. Likewise, you know, for most women, actually what they kind of need more is like herbs that help them like reopen their heart, where they've shut their heart down, because they've had to shut their heart down because the stress is just too much and they can't really express their emotions through the day because they're working in this masculine whatever paradigm that we have. And so things like passion flower can be much more helpful. But again, it's that balance. It's like using ashwagandha, thinking it's the panacea, that's where you're going to go wrong. Using ashwagandha alongside those other more feminine, quieter quality herbs, Siberian ginseng, passion flower, holy basil, reishi, that's the real juicy way to get the best benefits out of ashwagandha. And also, like, using it chronically, not smart.
So basically, it's that one-size-fits-all soundbitey mentality that we read so often on the internet. That's the downside, really, because you just read one set of qualities, and actually what we have to understand is, a bit like in Ayurveda where we have the doshas, you have to understand what your body makeup is and how your response is, and then how it might adapt in your body and regulate your body differently. So you need to kind of get maybe either understand yourself or go to someone like you who has advice when you're choosing that, so that you can listen to their picture and their pattern and what their day looks like, and then choose the specific adaptogens that work for them.
Exactly that. Okay, hope you've enjoyed all that. I hope you've learned a little bit about adaptogens from us. And come post your comments below. Like, subscribe, please. Help us get this content out to more people and have more conversations just like this. Thanks for watching.
Bye.
Bye.